Great. So to get started with the script, we're recording. My name is Alex Spice. I am here with Helen Brechelin. The date is August 10th, 2020. The time is 1:10 p.m. East Coast time. I am located in Boston, Massachusetts. Helen, where are you located?
I'm in Boston as well.
Great. I want to briefly review the informed consent and deed of gift document that you signed. This interview is for the COVID-19 Oral History Project, which is associated with the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive. The COVID-19 Oral History Project is a rapid response oral history focused on archiving the lived experience of the COVID-19 pandemic. We have designed this project so that professional researchers and the broader public can create and upload their oral histories to our open access and open source database. This study will help us collect narratives and understandings about COVID-19, as well as help us better understand the impacts of the pandemic over time. The recordings, demographic information, and the verbatim transcripts will be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive, and the Indiana University Library System for the use of researchers and the general public. Do you have any questions about the project that I can answer?
I don't think so.
Great. Taking part in this study is voluntary. You may choose not to take part or may leave the study at any time. Leaving the study will not result in any penalty or loss of benefits to which you are entitled. Your decision whether or not to participate in the study will not affect your current or future relations with Indiana University, IUPUI, or the Indiana University PUI Arts and Humanities Institute. Participating in this project means that your interview will be recorded in digital video and or audio format and may be transcribed. The recordings and possible transcriptions of my interview, copies of any supplementary documents or additional photos that you wish to share, and the informed consent and deed of gift may be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive in the Indiana University Library System, and will be available to both researchers and the general public. Your name and other means of identification will not be confidential. Do you have any questions?
No.
Great. In addition to your signed document, would you please offer a verbal confirmation that you understand and agree to these terms?
I understand and I agree.
Fantastic. I am also asking that you verbally confirm that you have agreed that your interview will be made available under the following license, the COVID-19 Oral History Project, Journal of a Plague Year, and the Trustees of Indiana University.
Yes.
Fantastic. And then, sorry, one last confirmation. And can I get a verbal confirmation that you would like this oral history to be made public immediately?
Yes.
Fantastic. Great. Thank you so much for all of that. To get started, could you talk a little bit about your background as well as where you work currently in the position that you hold?
Sure. So again, I'm Helen Brechelin, and I'm currently a gallery supervisor and administrator at the Institute of Contemporary Art in Boston. Before coming to the ICA, I studied painting and art history at Massachusetts College of Art and Design. And I, you know, always went to museums growing up. My parents weren't necessarily outdoorsy people, so we always were at museums, and they felt like a comfortable and a familiar landing point for me after school. So I've been at the ICA now for about 4 years and been enjoying it, starting, you know, right in the frontline role as a visitor assistant, which is a gallery staff member responsible for security, customer service, and education. And now I supervise that team and also do some administrative work for it. And did I answer that question fully? Is there something else that I needed to answer?
No, I think you covered all of it. Could you
I'm also an artist, and I paint when I'm able to.
Gotcha. Could you describe what an average day at your position would have looked like before the start of the pandemic?
Yeah, so I have a dual role, being half of the time I'm in the administrative offices, again, doing things like scheduling, answering emails for the team, working on like the back of house necessary admin work, like planning these morning meetings that we have, payroll, our approving timesheets, things like that. The other half of the time, I'm directly on the floor with the visitor assistant team, working with the public, while the museum is open. So, checking in with the visitor assistants, making sure that they have what they need. Also checking with our visitors, making sure our visitors have what they need, and fielding questions, fielding concerns. I would be, walking around the galleries, talking to individuals, making sure that the galleries are running smoothly, whether that's from a staff standpoint or a visitor standpoint.
Understood. Great. So let's sort of go back a little bit towards sort of January, February, and I guess early March. What were some of the things you heard about the coronavirus, or did you think about it at all much during that period of time? Did you have any concerns about it sort of in those early months?
It was on the periphery, at least in January, early February, very much on the periphery. Once it became end of February, early March, I remember talking with a coworker, and that coworker had mentioned that their roommate had ordered a lot of toilet paper, and we were starting to talk about the coronavirus and the U.S. and what that meant. I think at that point we started hearing about the Seattle area, like the West Coast, having a beginning to be large outbreak. The Boston area was kind of heading in that direction too, I think, fairly soon. So there was some discussion, but we were still under the impression that, or at least I was, that the museum would never close since it was such an unprecedented thing to happen. But unprecedented times call for unprecedented responses. I remember the day that we decided to, or that the museum decided to close, I wasn't sure. The Boston area was beginning to shut down a little bit more at a government level. It sounded like there were a lot of talks happening at an individual level. I wasn't sure exactly what was happening. I wasn't sure how to be feeling or what to be concerned about. And when the museum made its announcement, it was a Thursday, the 12th. One of the first things that I thought about was the team that I supervise, their part-time staff. What does this mean for them? I know myself as a full-time employee, if the museum closed, that there would be things that I could work on at home. Ideally, even if my position was kept on, but the staff that I directly work with, all of their work is frontline, is in the galleries. It's something that has to be done present at the museum, working with the public, talking to them about the artwork in the same space, having conversations. And how does that translate? How does that work if the institution closes? But also about the safety of everyone. It was a scary moment. It was a scary time. There was an outbreak that was happening in the area. And how rapidly it was spreading was another thing that really stood out.
Understood. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, so we, the museum made the, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead of your questions, but the museum made the decision to close, and at office staff were given Friday the 13th of all days, to be on site one last time to kind of get everything together that we would need to begin working from home fully. It wasn't a clear idea of how long this would happen. It was kind of just indefinitely. I had never worked from home at that point, so I was like trying to figure out what do I need from this desk that needs to come home with me in order to do the work that I do. So that was a question. I think I just ended up taking most of the snacks I had saved so they wouldn't go back, not knowing how long it would be. And, you know, maybe I think I left like an important notebook there, and I was like, but at least I got the snacks.
You can never overestimate the importance of snacks. So
yeah. Yeah. I was joking with a coworker because I had a can of soup in my desk, and they were saying that, you know, that's going to be pretty valuable. So you should keep that.
Do you have any idea, or if not, that's totally fine as well, any idea what the reaction was or how some of the part-time staff you supervised felt when the announcement was made that Thursday that the museum was going to close?
Well, I can't speak to all of their experiences, but I think there was, like, there ended up being a staff meeting because we were still open, so there was a lot of part-time staff there. Thursdays are a long day at the museum. It's where we see a lot of staff come into work. So there's most of the team, I think, ends up overlapping on a Thursday. And I think there was concern of not being able to attend this, like, on-site meeting where our director announced the museum would be closing. There was certainly a lot of anxiety when it came to compensation, what that meant, you know, especially for part-time staff who are hourly, who are compensated for the hours that they physically work on site. So if that ability to work on site is taken away, what does that mean? Does it mean that the museum will move forward with furloughs or layoffs? I think that general uncertainty was pretty apparent overall. You know, again, it was one of the first things that I thought about, and I'm not a part-time staff member, but again, I work with them so closely, so it's hard not to think about that, especially, you know, while we all, many of us, I could say, you know, have come to work at the ICA because we enjoy the work that we're doing, but that isn't necessarily everyone's reason. Some, you know, this is a job, this is how they make a meme. So when that comes into question, it can be really scary and on top of, you know, a looming pandemic.
So absolutely.
That stability, I think, was like shaken a bit. Yeah.
Definitely.
I think also because the way that the position works, it's pretty flexible to add hours as needed and reduce hours as needed. So if you were in a flux where you were actually trying to add hours and then suddenly that ability to, you know, make a little bit more money for a short amount of time was taken away and even, you know, put into question if you had a form of income, it's a pretty scary moment.
Definitely. In terms of, so moving past sort of the sort of first reactions as things got started, what was what did you experience mostly during quarantine when the museum was closed, both like personally and professionally?
Mm-hmm. So when quarantine first happened, when we decided, okay, go home, stay home, it was a real adjustment. I would say I feel like I adjusted pretty quickly. I feel like I have a pretty privileged position for this. I professionally, the ICA decided to keep me on payroll, decided to work with its staff, and they ended up keeping all of their part-time and full-time staff on payroll, which I think was a really important thing, especially in the arts and culture sector when compensation can be really limited and can be difficult at all levels, both for employees and for the institutions themselves. You know, funding is something that's constantly being discussed, and for the ICA to continue paying all of its full and part-time staff was a real relief. I think also helped, provide some dignity to those who were working and, didn't have a choice to not be working. While I ended up working from home, working on thinking about, okay, what do I need to do for my team? What is the best move right now? Because this is something that is, it's health, it's safety. It's mm-hmm. also, again, that income stability might have been changed. How are you there for your staff? How do you make them feel supported? How do you give them space if what it is that they need is space? How do you make them feel connected to an institution they're no longer able to, physically be in? How do you keep the community going? And I think I'd like to think that we have a fairly strong community amongst the team. I think at that time we had about 40 visitor assistants altogether, 40 part-time staff members who worked in the galleries. And we really tried to emphasize a team feeling in this community. And how do you do that digitally, far from each other, at home? Personally speaking, again, I have a good amount of space to live in. I have rooms that I can go into to have a space from those I live with. Have a dedicated space to work in, Wi-Fi that's available, pretty high speed, that gives me the ability to, work well. More time with my cat has been kind of nice. I think the cat likes it too. He's sitting right next to me, so if you hear any meows at any point during this, that's the cat. but I think what I've really appreciated is I live with my longtime boyfriend, and I've gotten to spend a lot of time with him, and that has been really nice. And we've really begun a new routine. We began a new routine. So in the beginning, it was like, okay, how do we do this? We're going to work. We now have to work in the same place together. We're now essentially kind of co-workers. So figuring out where does one person work? Where does the other person work? What do we need to set up to make that comfortable for both of us? It was actually a pretty great trial run, since my boyfriend will be starting a PhD program and will need a lot of time and space to work and to do that studying. So I guess it kind of worked out in our favor. And we've begun cooking a lot of meals together and going to the grocery store together, which has been very nice. I think I've been eating a lot healthier. Just an added bonus. But because we could only go to the store once a week, and we really tried, it took us like a moment to get there, but we have now been going to the store just once a week for months now, and that has really helped keep us on a specific meal regimen, I guess. Regimen sounds like too strict, but planning out our meals for the week, being conscious of overeating, being conscious of how many times we're leaving the space. I think being inside all day is something that was pretty hard at first. So taking the, at least the first couple months, being really deliberate about taking walks, you know, however you think, go out for a walk, make sure you have space, that kind of adjustment. Wearing a mask is something I think I've adjusted to more recently due to reopening of the museum compared to the beginning of the quarantine, since it was only something I had to wear outside. So it was like false, false comfort. Mm-hmm. So I'm at home. I don't have to wear a mask. I kind of like being a homebody. I like doing, like, the work that I was doing at home is the administrative side of my position, and I was finding that really interesting and kind of wanted to grow in that part of my professional life anyway. So this was a great time to do that. I had a lot of time to also research artists and listen to artist talks. Since artist talks can be, you know, like an hour long, that is time that I don't always get to dedicate. So it was nice to have time to do that. I did a lot of puzzles.
Mm. Good choice.
I always really enjoy puzzles, so it was great to have like time to do that too. Yeah. It was not great to run into the difficulty of finding a puzzle.
Yes. Fantastic. That's all very good to hear. I wanted to go back to one thing you said, just because I found it really interesting. What did you think, or in terms of trying to like keep a sense of community with your part-time staff while everyone is sort of separated, how did you go about that? What did you find effective, and what do you think, and were there any parts of it or any things you tried that you feel like just didn't work for your staff or your institution?
Yeah, so that for some background, there's myself, another supervisor, and we have a direct manager. So we kind of make up the management team for the visitor assistant team. And this was a question that was pretty big in the beginning. My manager was really cognizant of giving space to everyone, both us as supervisors and to the visitor assistant team, to trying to make herself available as much as needed to, you know, her staff. So there was this big question. The big question is, you know, this is a scary time. We don't know how this is affecting everyone. We don't know what they're going to want. So we took some time. We didn't want to just email everyone, you know, like incessantly. That's not a great feeling. We also know the question was how often would staff be checking their email. It doesn't feel like a time where you can really require that, since the position is so different, and you know, they don't have necessarily specific hours, so if you would be requiring them to check email, kind of, you know, when you got to it, great. But there are, you know, more important things or other things that might need their attention or compared to a simple work email that's like, how's it going? So we did at first a lot of individual check-ins, a little, you know, those who I talked to pretty regularly on the floor, I reached out to an individual email, kind of checking in, but trying again to provide that space to not ask someone to share more than what they would feel comfortable sharing. After, you know, about a month or so, or actually even before that, we were still sending out some sort of like weekly communication because we felt there should be some sort of communication. And that would keep us all together on the same page, it was part of the program before to have weekly communications, so it made sense that we would be doing these, but that they would be a little bit different. So each week they would come from a different member of the management team, and we kind of rotated to share and to spread out that work, and also that giving that voice to each of us. So in these like little emails, there wasn't really much to report on in terms of work, since we weren't actively working with our visitors and needing to do updates about the schedule or anything. It became more of like, you know, here's something that I've been thinking about or noticing. Here's some, you know, interesting news that I've read. There was often like a link about some sort of like animal. Those are nice and fun. Can be like a little, put a little smile, hopefully. And then we wanted to do an artist highlight. So whether it was an artist that might be coming up in the future, or we tried to stick to artists that were in our collection and taking the time to actually, you know, dive deeper into them, which I kind of like said before, but sharing that with the team, sharing some interviews that we found, sharing some articles that we found, writing a little blurb about the artists and, you know, maybe why we found them interesting, or and trying to choose artists that, you know, might be relevant to the time or help us have a different perspective. So the first artist that I talked about was Kara Walker, which in hindsight, you know, feels more relevant than ever. And she's always been an artist that I enjoyed, so I wanted to promote her work. And while she's quite well known, it was still fun to listen to her talks again and to read her interviews. So we did those weekly, and it came to a point where we were like, you know, we miss seeing everyone's face. We really miss that. It was like a big part of what we did when we were in the galleries and on site was, you know, seeing everyone, having this team, talking together, talking about art together, checking in with everyone. So we wanted to figure out how can we do that virtually. So after some time, I think it was like a month and a half or something, you know, trying to make sure we provided space, we set up a little virtual meeting, and it was over Zoom, as most things are now. And we had great attendance. It was completely optional. No one was required to attend that, but it was for the first one, we had most of the team present, and we were all kind of just talking and commenting on how, you know, we missed seeing each other. And I think we had a prompt, I think, for the, just to have some sort of icebreaker for the meeting. Of, I think it was like show something that you've been working on, because a lot of us were working on that, and that was just a really nice moment to go through, you know, reflect, share something creative we might have done over the course of the time, and begin to like connect more in that community. We also have a group of individuals who have the title of visitor assistant lead, and they're a step up from visitor assistants. They're leaders, and kind of rely on them to do a little bit more with the team. So over the closure, they chose individual projects that they wanted to work on to help with community building during this time apart. As visitor assistant leads, community building is kind of built into their role, so it made sense that they would take these on. And again, they were self-identified projects. They sent out weekly little puzzles for the team to do. So that was, you know, word searches, crosswords, little like picture scrambles, all kind of connected back to the museum in some way, but just something fun and light. Again, completely optional, but something that went out there and to look forward to, very low stakes, you know.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
In terms of, you mentioned about sort of what people have been making or how they've been relating to this creatively. I was wondering, in your own sort of experience as an artist, how has that been the case for you?
Yeah, the beginning of quarantine, I was able to actually do a lot of making, which was really, really nice. The extra time that I got back from commuting every day, I think a lot of us have felt that the commute can really grind you down and also take up a lot of time in the day. So having that extra time allowed me to do other things like making. So I made a lot of paintings, able to finish up some projects that were kind of lingering, which was nice. And I think painting for me is, you know, a stress relief. It's something that can occupy my mind and just be really, I can be really instinctual about, and I don't have to overthink it. Can go in there, relax, paint, and, you know, enjoy.
Fantastic. I have one more topic or thought I want to cover in relation to sort of what you experienced during the quarantine, and that is obviously during that time, the coronavirus wasn't the only sort of, I guess, major story. The killing of George Floyd and sort of all that came with that, or what became more prominent in the news sort of was very much also part of this period. And I'm wondering, did that have any effect for you either personally or in relation to the work you do at the ICA?
Yeah, absolutely. The killing of George Floyd was a really upsetting moment. It's unfortunately not a surprising moment. We've had these moments before, but I think personally, what stands out about this time, and I think many of us have had this like same reaction, was the sheer response to it. The fact that because people were home, because people had time, they could really stand up for this injustice, really go out and advocate and protest and share their, you know, feelings, discontent, just like being distraught, being frustrated, because it isn't the first time. It you know, we want it to be the last time. I would want it to be the last time. I can't say that that's the case. I'm sure that there have been cases since then. And it's really something that stands out. It's something that, you know, should give you pause, that does give me pause. And I've thought a lot about, you know, it's that taking inventory, you know, self inventory of what are you doing in your life? What communities do you have around you? How are you engaging with those communities? What can you be doing more in those communities than you already are? If you are even, you know, connected to them in some way. So I was thinking, okay, about, you know, my hometown. I'm originally from Connecticut, from a very white town, and the implications of that and how to get involved there. My schooling, from Massachusetts College of Art and Design, how am I still connected to them and that community? And also currently in, you know, living in Boston, working at the Institute of Contemporary Art, a museum, a cultural organization. Cultural organizations and museums have quite a long history, not always good. And how can I, what do I need to be doing, especially in my role as a supervisor, to support my staff, to advocate for changes within the museum, within the institution, how can I be using my voice and my privilege as a white woman in a supervisory position to make space and promote, you know, equity and inclusion, belonging, diversity. And we've had a lot, I've been part of many conversations now, and I think the institution is trying its best to make space for those conversations. I think staff are also, you know, speaking up more and making their own space when there isn't one. But I think it's, there's a lot of room for improvement in all spaces, not just at the space that I'm in.
Definitely.
So it has to be, you know, everyone, in my opinion, should be doing their own part to help, to support, to advocate. And that can take so many forms. And I think that's where a lot of confusion happens. And I know I struggle with that myself. Like, what is the right move? And it's really hard to know. I've been doing a lot of listening. I think we should all do listening. And that's a way to make space, is to listen to those around you, especially voices that are not your own. And it is really draining, and that's part of it. And it's just a matter of pushing through that and, you know, doing what you can. So I've been thinking a lot. I know it's definitely, like, affected my practice, too, as an artist. And does it make sense to continue to make the work that I make, which is just, like, again, really intuitive. I do, like, abstract landscapes. Is now the right moment for that? Does that make sense? Especially because I was posting on social media. What is the role of social media? I feel like I've just come out of quarantine with a lot more questions than really any answers, but that's probably just a life thing. I've done a lot of thinking.
Sorry, yeah. I was just going to say, I have also shared that experience, so I understand that feeling.
I don't know, what is life but, like, an endless series of questions?
Yes.
You know? But I've done a lot of thinking about communication. And I think that's something that can be overlooked. Especially in this age of, like, instant communication, you know? Of social media, of, like, quick bites of information. How is that communicating effectively? How do you encourage people to go beyond those, like, quick summaries? Because the world is complex. And if you don't understand, or if you don't try to understand its complexity, it creates a lot of problems. You know, you can be erasing key points, key identities, key context. And that is something that I'm always concerned about. It's a lot to think about. And, you know, if you can make space to communicate better, I think we'd be in a better place.
Absolutely. In terms of next questions, I'm wondering sort of more about, after the quarantine, sort of the ICA at this point has reopened to the public with obviously limited numbers, but could you talk a little bit about sort of what that has been like for you, what your experiences have been with that?
Yeah. So, I mean, how much information do you want to know? Like, where would you like me to start? Like, just before we reopened, when we reopened, now,
I suppose just when you reopen to now.
Okay. The first week of reopening, you can plan as much as you want. And I do find that it's better to over-prepare than under-prepare, but how do you prepare for something you've never dealt with? So that's why we ask a lot of questions. But the first week, we were free to the public from Thursday to Sunday. And the first 2 days, we were free for members, and members could bring a guest. The first 2 days were very quiet, very limited numbers. And then when we were open to the public, we definitely saw a steady increase. And the weekend was quite busy. But since then, and when I say busy, that's another thing. Our terminology has completely changed. The way that we refer to things is so different, because busy before would be, you know, we're sardines in here. But now busy just means, there were individuals, there were guests, there were visitors in each space. While when it's slow, you know, you have a couple people here and there. But we had great attendance that first weekend, and I think that gave me mixed feelings, because it was great to know that people wanted to come back, that people valued our space and valued the work that we do and wanted to see the art. I feel like I've met, or when I've spoken to visitors, a lot of them have actually never been to the museum. I think that first week it was a lot of repeats, like, oh, thank you for opening. We're so glad that we can come back. We really missed this space. We missed being with the art. Some people, you know, wanted to be really chatty, because I know I'm kind of that way, where I've been in isolation for so long and I want to talk to other people and have conversations. That's kind of what drew me to like a more front-facing role, was having these conversations. So it was nice to have those after so long, if not, and to just that talking about artwork is something that, you know, I've done for a while, between going to school for art, and that's kind of a requirement, is you have to talk about art there, to going into a position that's a front facing role where you're there to educate about the artwork. And being able to be back in the space and to talk about the artworks was so, you know, gratifying, I guess, is kind of the word that I want to use. It was familiar. I don't want to use nostalgic as a word. Comforting, I guess, is kind of the word that I want to use. Like, oh, yeah. Right, like being in a space with a work of art is so different than seeing an image on a screen at a different scale. You can't see the texture. You can't really appreciate the scale that the art is made in. Sometimes the color isn't right, you know. So physically being in a space, looking at an artwork, and just having, like, talking to someone and asking them what are they thinking about when they look at this work. It's those small moments that you can't do from home that were
definitely
really nice to get back. But it's this double edge where, you know, that's really great. It's great to be working to remind myself why I'm working, what I'm doing, what we're trying to do here. But then it's the other side where it's like, well, we're still in a pandemic and we're providing a space for people to gather. The museum has done a great job of reducing the amount of ticket sales to make it safe, safe and comfortable. The museum has done a great job of promoting and putting into place requirements for visitors, for staff, for everyone, while they're in the building, what is expected, you know, masks, distance, health assessments, things like that. So, oh, and making like hand sanitizer accessible everywhere.
Mm.
And you can't take a corner without seeing like a freestanding hand sanitizer dispenser. So the museum has been, when I have raised a concern for staff safety, I feel like the museum has given a good response, which I've been appreciative of when I say, you know, I think the staff would be concerned about this thing for their safety. They go, oh, okay. And then they make a solution. So that immediate response has been really great to see. But it's still this underlying question of, you know, what is the role of a cultural institution in a pandemic, and what are they asking staff to do if by opening? And I mean, we want the museum to be open and we want it to be available and we want it to succeed and to be there after all of this. So it just brings up a lot of questions. I do feel pretty good about what the museum has done and how it's trying to provide safety, but it makes you wonder, is it a false sense of security?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because it's a virus. You can't talk to a virus. Yeah. It's just you have to make the right decisions. And I see the museum trying to do its best. But it's just, you know, it's that big question. Is this the right thing to do? I keep talking to my team and remembering when we're working in the galleries together of how we used to do things. They're so ingrained in me because I've been doing them for years now.
Mm.
And over like the first couple weeks, we were all talking. We're like, oh, right, this is like a little different now because we've had to make some slight changes just to make things safe. But, you know, I would just stand next to somebody to talk to them before, and now I have to stand 6 feet apart to be safe. And I keep telling them, you know, it's like riding a bike, but it's just a different bike. And I have to remember, this is the new bike, it's not the old bike, but I still know how to ride it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
An adjustment.
Definitely. So I do want to be mindful of the time. I was wondering just before we start wrapping up, are there any questions that you wish I would have asked in relation to this oral history that didn't get asked?
Well, I have a question for you, actually.
Okay.
I wonder if you had reached out to any of the part-time staff that work at the museum.
I have,
their experiences. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be great to add. Because, again, I can only speak from my experience and what I've seen from a supervisor level. And I have been in many conversations with various, you know, whether it's my direct manager, whether it's senior staff. I feel I have been more privy to conversations of how the museum is going to handle things than, you know, a part-time staff member. And we try to communicate things that need to be communicated, but I could easily see there being this feeling of what is happening, you know, especially while we were closed. And the problem is no one really knew what was happening because it all had to be decided. It was, again, it's an unprecedented time. It's an unprecedented state to be in. And there are so many things to consider. And there were so many, you can't start making plans if you don't know what the parameters are that you have to plan around, you know?
Absolutely.
So I'm really curious how the what the part-time staff perspective was. And while I've had many conversations with them, I'm still their immediate supervisor, and I'd like to believe that they can be honest with me, but I think they can be even more honest when it's not me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you very much for participating in this. It has been very interesting to hear your thoughts on everything.